All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 59 in this American History Program of History at Our House. Today's topic is called the Critical Period, for reasons which will become obvious as we discuss it. Of course, though, we have a kind of a two-part mission today, as previously. And the first part consists of building the base of our Tower of Knowledge. So as we were looking at the other time, we have this symbolic representation that I've created of American history. And in order to know American history, you've got to have certain and know and understand the United States today. You've got to have a minimum of certain building blocks of awareness, you could call them. And so I think the metaphor is very apt. You have to be able to see kind of the logic of how things have been shaped and how we've gotten to where we are today. And it proceeds along a certain arc of events and with certain precedents and causes and so on, building up to the final sum. And so we live at the far extremity. We live at the very top, symbolically here, looking down on everything that came before that makes our world and our lives possible. So I think the representation, the symbolic representation, is very apt. It's a great way of thinking of it. It's a good metaphor. Metaphors always have limits, of course. So at a certain point, metaphors or analogies break down. But and so we won't try to push this any further than it can go. But for now, it's, I think, a great way of thinking of it. And so we have this building block that we need to understand American history and America today, which is the history of religion within American civilization, within Western civilization, Europe in particular, right? And also within America. And specifically, of course, that pertains to Christianity. And it's so fascinating. I don't know how much you guys pay attention to at all, but there was a really big controversy this week. Your parents might have been talking about it, and it had exactly to do with this. And I thought, wow, this is so fascinating. I mean, I wasn't particularly impressed with what people were saying, but I was fascinated and heartened in a sense that this was happening because it was such an elegant demonstration of what I was trying to point out to you guys the other day. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? This controversy in American politics last week that has to do with religion. Did anybody catch it? I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't, but all the adults out there are going to know what I'm talking about, because adults in America have to pay attention to what the president says. It's important. And so the last week, the president made a speech, and he was talking about the history of violence within Western religion. And in particular, he was talking about an episode in Western history that people know about. It's called the Crusades. And the Crusades were in large measure religious wars. And so, I mean, I didn't pay close attention to it, but it sparked a controversy because a lot of people were saying, disagreeing with the president, and they were saying, well, yeah, it's true that Christianity has violence in its past, but that's long gone. And so the point is that today, as far as religion and civilization is concerned, the really big problem is Islam and whether or not people within the religion of Islam have given up on religious violence. And it's obvious that many of them have not. And thus, it presents a life or death problem for everybody else who is civilized. And so there's this fascinating debate that went on. Not much of a debate, because people nowadays don't listen to each other. They just speak at each other. So anyway, there's a lot of noise. about you're right, I'm wrong, or, you know, you're wrong, I'm right. Sorry. And that sort of thing about who's right and who's wrong about, you know, the Crusades and what they mean and jihad nowadays and all this and that. And it just, to me, like I said, I'm not here to pick sides in the debate. I'm here to point out to you guys, if at all you're hearing this, or you're hearing it discussed by your parents or what have you, why? This is your world, and in a sense, I am here to give you guys a wake-up call that it is something to pay attention to. You guys are now at the point I would put to you, as a propose to you, that you guys are now at the point where you need to start paying attention. It doesn't have to be your whole life. There's a lot of wonderful things that are rightly your concern at your young age, and you shouldn't lose sight of those things. But I also think that at your age, you should start paying attention to the world, and that you are capable of doing it and profiting from doing it. In other words, that it's good for you to pay attention, especially because you have knowledge. You have historical knowledge. And it's time for you to start engaging with the world and taking that knowledge you've got and seeing whether or not it represents a useful tool for interpreting what you see. And you need to start deploying this knowledge and looking around. Because otherwise, the history lessons that you're getting are a dead end. Right? Because they become, what are they? All they are is a lot of huffing and puffing by Mr. Powell. And you listen, and you might be interested. And, oh yeah, he's pretty passionate about all this. And he's got these cool skyscraper diagrams. And yeah, it's really interesting. These are good history lectures I'm taking here. But what happens after? I'm going to... getting on my swim team and then I come home and I do a little bit of homework and I watch some TV and play some games and go on social media. And what happened to the history? Where'd it go? Right? I mean, I don't find that I've succeeded. I'm going to put it on me here. I don't find that I've succeeded in engaging you in discussions about these things. And I'm not sure if there's a better approach that I can take to doing it, to get you guys to open up about it. Whether or not you're comfortable doing it with me or you're just thinking about it on your own, I'm not sure which way it is, right? But my point is that, in telling you this story is to kind of try to show you, I don't know if it's going to be compelling or not, that this stuff is relevant. At some point, I don't know if it's going to be before the next election or before the one after that, the fate of the United States will be in your hands. That's why I want you to wake up, because you got to do a better job than the grown-ups are doing. You got to get knowledgeable, and you got to take care of American freedom. It needs taken care of. And so I'm hoping that somehow I'm getting through to you, and you're hearing the message here that, again, this is not, it's not about the past. If we are going to go and look at this, if we are going to look at the fact that tens of millions of Christians mass murdered each other, is that about the past? Does that strike you as irrelevant to your human existence or not? Alexander's going to bravely stride forth. Go ahead, Alexander.
Well, it's not happening anymore, but I wouldn't say that it's irrelevant, because it's basically the most prominent example of religious war, and we're sort of having a religious war right now, so it's important because something like it is still happening, but that itself is not happening.
Yeah, right, there you go. The key word that you use is like. The key word that you're referring to there, Alexander, is similarity. And so, I mean, history, as Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat. It rhymes. So, you know, it's not, you're not ever going to live through the religious wars of the 15th century or 16th century or 17th century. But you are living through one in the 21st century, whether you want to or not. So yeah, that's it. There's a common denominator here and an opportunity for you to have important thoughts. And you, each and every individual here, has got to take this on. You have got to become ambitious about these topics and not just kind of suppose, oh, I'll handle that later, or I don't need to think about these things now. It's not on me. Before you know it, you're going to be voting. And that means you are going to, we're going to talk about this, you are going to be using physical force against your fellow citizens, whether you acknowledge that or not. And that means you're going to be using it on me, and I won't appreciate it. So that's why I'm here, right? Because I believe in freedom, and I don't want you to be voting away my rights, as too many people do. So I have a personal stake in all of this. The world matters. It's a wonderful place. There's so many great things in it. It's a tragedy if the education that most kids are receiving nowadays has deadened them to these issues and is not equipping students to get ready to be a part of this world. Genuine, responsible, knowledgeable, thoughtful, mindful, aware citizens. That is where we need to head. I think it's going to be hard to do. But anyway, once again, that's me making the case here. And we're going to have to, now that I spent all that time on the spiel, we don't have time for the actual details of the Reformation of religious wars today. But I can't help it. There's no point. There is literally zero point in me teaching you one more historical fact this year if I cannot transmit to you the importance of it all, right? We may as well just quit now. I don't care if you learn anything about the Civil War. I don't care if you learn anything about the Cold War. There are plenty of people walking around. They're called historians with a gigantic amount of useless knowledge. I'm not here to give you that. To me, that is worse than a waste of time. So, like I said, I don't care if we get to another fact, if we don't have the proper perspective on using those facts. So final wrap up of this segment is, I invite you to pay more attention. To pay more attention, to start to get more engaged in the world around you. If I can figure out a way to make it more of a kind of a homework thing, I don't know if I can, but maybe I can try to figure out a way to make it more formal. Because I think it's really, really important. If you're not doing it, if you're not paying attention to these things, when are you going to? And here's an important point as well. It's not a switch you can flip. You cannot grow up ignoring the world, and then all of a sudden you're 21 and you say, oh, I'm going to pay attention now. It doesn't happen that way. If that's the way it goes, you're going to face an enormous struggle when you're older to try to get informed, try to get when you're an adult, and some people do it. The fact that your parents are homeschooling you guys means that they've already been through part of it. They have at least faced up to the issue of your need to be educated, which you should thank them for on a daily basis. But I guarantee you it was a big struggle for them to get there. And it will remain a big struggle for them for your entire childhood. That's an example of how hard it is to do the right thing when you yourself probably just got a basic old public school education. You hated history when you were a kid, didn't understand it, it was boring, and then you had to wake yourself up when you were a grown-up. This is all History at Aros is about, not having to wake yourself up. It's about being awake all the time from the start. Way better to do that than to have to fix it later. Believe you me, I spent 15 years studying history as a grown-up in order to fix my gaps. Wow, 15 years of my life I had to retask. Imagine if I'd been educated. Don't get me started because it makes me angry. All right. Let's go back to the critical period. Everything's critical, but this part of history, after the Treaty of Paris of 1783, if I need to remind you, after the Battle of Yorktown, after the Revolutionary War, Americans have won. Now that we're leaping back into this context, the Americans have won the Revolutionary War. They sit down. It's going to be in Paris. Anybody, does it make sense to you guys that the peace treaty of the American Revolution would have been signed in Paris? Any thoughts about that? Nah, that's not a hard question. Come on. Keen?
Well, I suppose it's closer for the King of England. Oh,
that's not why. The King of England's not going to do it. It's going to be his diplomats. But why is it in Paris, Alexander?
Well, because first of all, the French fought, and second of all, neither of them want to go into the other person's
territory. Exactly. The British ambassadors don't want to go to America and be surrounded by those Americans who have repudiated them. The Americans don't want to go to London. But beyond that, it's important that France is in the middle, because that helps America, right? America needs France as an ally. Militarily, it wouldn't have survived the war without France. So, yeah, it makes sense that it's in Paris. So it's the Treaty of Paris, and they're all arguing over the details of who gets what at the end of the war. Which is, you know, it always goes this way. It's like, Keane's not convinced, though. Why would they go to France, Keane said? What's your confusion?
Well, I understand what you're saying, but France, they didn't, you know, England didn't like France in the first place, and now they've allied with, you know, the Americans who have just humiliated them in this war.
Yeah.
It makes sense what you say, but it also seems like they could have chosen another European
country
that was not involved in the war.
All right, I like that rebuttal. Thank you, Keane. And I wish I got more such rebuttals. So you're right. You know, it you could look at that that way too. You could say, well, why would the British want to go to Paris? Well, I guess if I got counteract what you just said, Keane, what I would say is Britain and France had a long history of diplomatic relations. So they didn't like each other, but they acknowledged each other as legitimate powers. And so there's a kind of game that was played and continues to be played by European statesmen, which is, aren't we all important and great? And so we treat each other like we are legitimate. And you know, this is part of the game. So I think that's the answer to that, Keane, is that the game between England and France have been going on for a long time. And so America, however, is the upstart here, right? And so if America wants legitimacy, it's got to join the game. And it's got to, you know, it's got to behave according to the rules of European states, right? Because this is still a Eurocentric world at this point. Okay, so hopefully that's a, I appreciate your point, Keen, but I hope that's a good enough counterargument. Okay. What was I going to do? I was going to go from this. Oh, yeah. To this, which for some reason is not opening up because it's minimized. Okay. But I don't want to go to that right away. Oh, go to this first. Okay. This is an outline map of the United States after the based on the Treaty of Paris. Outline map of North America, indeed. And the Caribbean, really. Right? And, based on the Treaty of Paris. So it's a cool map because, well, in green, we have the new United States, which is pretty cool. It's all the way over to the Mississippi. And that was important, right? Remember, what did the Proclamation of 1763 say? What did the Quebec Act of 1774 say? About this area. Alexander?
Well, it was French.
No. It had been French, and it had been taken from the French, and it would now belong to Britain after 1763. But what did they say in 1763? The Proclamation of 1763, followed by the Quebec Act of 1774 to punish the colonists, Alexander.
That they can't go there?
They can't go there. Right, this is not for you. So this is a good outcome for the Americans and of this war, right? Is that they win all of this territory over to the Mississippi, because that was partly one of the reasons why they had fought the Revolutionary War was this refusal of the British to allow them to colonize that area, and the British couldn't hold on to it anyway. They knew that they weren't gonna continue to fight Americans over this territory. And they had lost the war, so they had to give it up. Meanwhile, there's other arrangements here. Spain had actually technically been an ally of France, and as a result, Spain was given possession of Florida and retained all of this over here. So this is evidently an issue that's going to have to be dealt with later in history. Other curiosities other than, you know, the British Empire up in Canada is expanding and expanding. One other curiosity is that Russia was starting to expand down the West Coast. We'll get to that at a later juncture. So the geography is pretty interesting here. America's big, right? Compared to European countries, it was already really large, but wasn't that populous. And it was still going to be, you know, if things turned out this way, imagine what American life would be like. What a fascinating kind of what if, right? What if this was America? How many people right now would not be living in America? Alexander, me, Juliet, me, my hand needs to be raised. Who else is not in America? Timothy? Right? So whatever, if you think about where you are, whether or not you're in the green part right now, is not America. If it's not a green, it's not America. So anyway, this is just the beginning, obviously. We're going to get to America expanding across the West here. But at this point, it's only this big, and it's certainly not going to get any bigger. In fact, there are some serious issues now. So the United States are granted this territory, but here's how they tended to think of it. We now zoom in, right? And there is the Mississippi, and the Spanish territory is in yellow. And we can zoom in a little bit more, I think. Yeah, let's zoom in a little bit more. Something like this would be kind of a useful zoom. Look at this strange arrangements. Yeah, look at Massachusetts. It's here. It's over here. It's over here. And it's over here. Oh, but it says and Virginia. And over here it says and New York, right? And look at Virginia. It starts here, and it's all of this to the Mississippi. And all of this. Why? What is this quirky map? What are we looking at? Does it make any sense at all? Based on what? What is this? Here, I'll help you guys. I'll zoom out a bit. What does the title say? What's the legend of the map say? Declan?
The United States, 1783.
Keep going.
Subdivisions as claimed by the states.
Okay, so means what does that mean?
That the states are claiming more land
for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. Based on what? What's going on here? Why is Virginia claiming all of this stuff? And Massachusetts claiming all of this stuff. And somehow Virginia is claiming all of it. Why? By what right? Micah?
Because those are the two most important colonies.
No, it's not a matter of importance. In this case, nope. Not just a matter of importance. Think about this. Why would Virginia and Massachusetts have these huge claims? Virginia and Massachusetts. Those two and not others. Timothy.
They might be the most powerful.
No. Alexander?
They were the first two.
They were the first. And therefore, they were granted this land by...
The British?
Yeah, by the royal charters, which said this belongs to you. So Virginia is saying, we're the first state, and we were granted all of this land. Nobody's claimed it since, and this our charter says this belongs to us. And then Massachusetts is saying, well, no, our charter says anything between this latitude and this latitude is ours. So they're claiming it. And Connecticut's saying, no, we got this by a subsequent charter, which overturns your charter, and so on. Okay. So, well, what's the big deal? Why is this... This never came to be, obviously, so why am I showing it to you? Who cares that these were the claims of the states? All right, I'm going to help you to answer this question. I'm going to take you back to the Declaration of Independence. I'm going to show you something that you didn't notice. Okay, read that line. Just pay attention to it, and I want you to see if you can find something that's queer about it. Something that isn't quite right, as far as you would expect, perhaps, in terms of modern usage. Something grammatically strange. Juliet?
Well, the way they phrased it, they're making it sound as if each of the 13 colonies...
It's more precise than that. It's very specific. Ben?
It's the fact that United isn't capitalized.
Yeah, what? Wait a minute. What's up with this? Why isn't it capitalized, Ben?
Because they just capitalized all the nouns and it's not a noun?
No way. No, it's very significant. Timothy?
I think it's because if they capitalized United, that would mean that all the states, that it would kind of be like, because the states aren't united together. It's kind of like the United States, like The 49 states, the 48 states, excluding Hawaii, are not connected to Alaska.
No, that's not. No, no, I think you're going off in the wrong direction. It's much more basic, right? Micah, go ahead.
They were arguing over land, so.
No, that comes later. That's 1783. This is 1776. So what they're saying is this. Let me take you to the bottom here because there's some interesting clues in the declaration as well. Well, look at this phrasing. That these united colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. What are they saying there? Alexander?
They're saying that these united colonies are also supposed to be independent of everything else, including each other. So they're kind of united but independent, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, no, it's not that it doesn't make any sense. It's they're trying to draw a line that's difficult to draw. They are allied, and they're using the term united here, in their resistance to the crown, but they are states. Ben, follow up?
We do. It's awesome.
Okay. I don't know what that was. Anyway, so these united colonies are, so here's the key to all of this. We, the representatives of the United States of America, right? It is, they are using weird capitalizations, right? But if it was a name, they would capitalize the United. But it's not. It's a phrase. It is explaining their relationship at the time. But in what manner were they united? Real question. By what were they united, if anything? For instance, each of the colonies had a separate parliament and separate laws. Did they have any laws in common? Here's an interesting, tricky question. Did they have any laws in common? At any point, perhaps, King?
Well, at this point, I don't think they did. All they had to link them was the declaration that they all, you know, unanimously accepted.
Before this, did they have anything in common?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Yeah, they did. It's one of our anchor facts. Alexander?
Well, they had the British law and...
Exactly. They were colonies of Britain, so the Magna Carta and everything else applied to them. So, yeah, they still... But now that they have dissolved their association with Britain, that's gone. And so what do they have in common? That became the difficult question. And so they've got these separate territorial claims, for instance. And, well... Let's say they can't sort that out. Maybe they've got other things to argue about. I'll tell you another thing that they once had, which they no longer had in common. So one thing that they had in common was, if you were a colony of Great Britain, with whom did you trade? By definition, with whom did you trade? All right, let's see. Sophie, I'm going to put you on the spot. With whom? You were a colony of Britain. That's a big, big clue. If you were with Britain exclusively, what's the theory of having a colony? What's it supposed to do for you as a mother country?
Support the mother country.
Yeah, it's supposed to make stuff for you and trade with you, right? That's the whole theory. So if you're Virginia, you trade with Britain. If you're Massachusetts, you trade with Britain. You have only very limited, very special permission to trade with each other. Your primary trading relationship, every single colony, your primary trading relationship is with Britain because it's your mother country. Okay. Now, who's the mother country? Alexander?
Well, there isn't really one.
There isn't one anymore. They have said, we don't have a mommy anymore. We are independent states. Right? We're all grown up. Okay, so now, see a problem? Who can follow this trail of breadcrumbs here? Your whole colonial trading life revolved around a system of trade with the mother country. You now do not have a mother country. Can you see a problem? Life's just going to go on the same thing, same way it was before? No changes? What happens when you get on your boat at the port of Charleston, South Carolina, and where do you go with that boat full of tobacco? Where do you go with it? Where would you have gone with it in 1700? Alexander?
Well, you would have gone to Britain, but now Britain probably doesn't want to trade with you, so you have to trade with somebody else.
Now you've got a whole new set of problems. Because what is the basic policy of countries towards foreign countries, of which you are now examples? I guess I haven't got you guys excited about this. Okay, I tried. You are a foreign country now. They don't want to trade with you either. You're foreigners. If they buy tobacco from you, what happens to their money? It goes into your coffers. It goes to America. You're not part of the British system, so the British don't want to trade with you. Do the French want to trade with you? No, they didn't want to trade with you in the first place either, right? And so how's this all going to work now? With whom are you going to trade? And by what rules? Bria, you have an interesting proposal. Bria, go ahead.
You trade with yourself. You trade with other people from your area.
What do you mean area?
Well, from either it could be your state, if they had states at that time, I'm not completely sure.
Okay, so states trading within your state, within, now that was regular, right? With a colony, people within a colony traded with each other, that was fine. Okay, so now they're a state, so you're going to keep on trading with people within your state. But remember, Bria, your primary commercial relationship, the thing that defined your life, how did you make money? You bought and sold goods with the mother country. That was the defining feature. You are a colony. That's gone now. Now what?
You trade with other states.
Yeah, you try to, right? And you try to trade with your neighbors, you try to trade with other countries, but you are no longer one of the privileged members of the British system under the British aegis, protected by the British Navy, given special treatment at ports in Britain, with special access to British goods brought from China and India, and all of the other wonderful things that come from being British. You are now Virginian, North Carolinian, Delawarean, Massachusettsian. I don't know what you call people from Massachusetts. Massachusettsian? I don't know how to say it. So anyway, you are now some... You are... There's an expression for this. A person non grata. It means that you're not welcome. You are now, you know, it's like you have a disease. You don't belong anymore. So you got to now figure out a whole new way of life. You got to figure out a whole new way of life of trading with people. And you got to figure out rules to do it with. And hopefully you can try to kiss and make up with Britain, because they were really important to you, and they probably still want your stuff, except the terms of trade are not going to be nearly as good as they used to be. Sorry. right? Because you guys rebelled. So you think you didn't want to pay the tea tax before? Guess how much of a tea tax you're going to pay now, buddy? Are you happy to be free? Because here comes the tea tax. So guess what Americans started doing? Just like what I did this morning. This is, you want to understand. What do Americans drink when they go to Starbucks, Keen?
Coffee.
And coffee. Forget the British. We're going to drink coffee now. Because we don't want their British tea anymore. That's a symbol of American independence right there, is coffee. So anyway, so they got to figure out a whole new way of life. And not only that, if Virginia is trading with different countries in different states, they've got rules for trade, and their neighbor, Maryland, has its own rules of trade with other states and with other countries. And meanwhile, North Carolina's got its own rules for trading with other states and other countries. So, you know, we go back to this map. Imagine this is the way that everything divides up. And meanwhile, Virginia's got certain rules of trade. And of course, Virginia's big and important and populous, and it's got a lot of clout. So it's able to negotiate treaties of trade with other countries and other states that are favorable to it. Meaning that Virginia is going to charge a lot of taxes on stuff from other people, and get a really good deal from them and so on. They'll have to lower their prices, blah, blah, blah. Okay, Virginia's going to get a really good deal. Meanwhile, North Carolina, that's a lot smaller and it's got 1/10 the population at this point, has nowhere near the same advantages. So North Carolina decides we are going to open up our port in order to take it to try to compete with Virginia. North Carolina, I'm making a hypothetical case, by the way. North Carolina says we are going to remove all barriers to trade. We're going to have free trade with the world. Now, this is an ingenious idea. Free trade, no barriers. The costs of everything go down. You don't have to have any worries about smuggling and enforcement and all of the laws and onerous regulations. And okay, so North Carolina all of a sudden has a set of rules that are completely different than Virginia. What happens? And I chose these two for a reason, right? Look at this big, long line here. Why do you suppose I chose them? Keen?
I'm not sure why you chose that, but I was going to say that you end up getting competition between the states, and they start having to, you know, they're acting like separate entities and having a better price, better terms.
They are separate entities, and they are competing. Yes, Timothy?
Well, since they have two completely different rules of trade, they're probably not going to be able to trade with each other now.
Yeah, except there's that big long border there, and the people of North Carolina are getting a hold of a huge amount of stuff for way less than people in Virginia are getting it for. What starts to happen? Right? Countries with free trade have lower costs than countries with regulations. So everything in North Carolina is cheaper. What starts to happen? You guys haven't studied much economics, have you? Juliet?
People start to go to North Carolina.
Yeah, maybe people move from Virginia to North Carolina. That's one answer, right? So you get what's called a brain drain, and that happens in a lot of situations, depending on where the rules are and where there are fewer rules. But on top of that, you start to get smuggling. Stuff starts to get into Virginia. Is there a fence in between Virginia and North Carolina? Stuff starts to go up into Virginia from North Carolina, and the people are buying it there because from smugglers because it's cheaper. What happens to the rules in Virginia? They get undermined. They start to get angry. What do Virginia and North Carolina end up doing? As separate states competing in the world against each other. Doesn't take long before, Alexander.
They fight a war.
They're at war. And if they are at war,
And Virginia goes, I got to accelerate this because we took too much time here, but if Virginia and North Carolina end up going to war, and don't think that it couldn't happen, there were, we can't go into specific stories, but there were examples of cross-border wars, really serious conflicts between different states over different rules. In particular, for instance, rules pertaining to alcohol. Not everybody agreed with whether or not people should be free in that particular area, as they still continue to disagree over that, for instance. And they were at each other's throats over trade rules could eventually, as independent countries, have ended up at war with each other. Very easy to project that outcome. And imagine then Virginia allies with its neighboring states, North Carolina allies with the southern states, therein. And then what happens? Who else might they ally with? Who else is going to actually want a piece of this action? Because they're really going to be actually really happy that the American states are now at war with each other. Who's gonna butt in now? Timothy says,
Britain,
of course. They're going to love it that these colonies are at war with each other. They're going to find a way to meddle in those conflicts, take advantage of them, because they want revenge, and they want to be able to muscle in on trade and take over. And if Britain gets involved on one side, guess what else happens? This can't be hard. Alexander?
France gets on the other side.
And what happens? You got a war in America now between 13 separate states, and you got France on one side, Spain on the other side, France on the other, and so on. And before you know it, what kind of place is this? Somebody came up with a brilliant comparison for me in the other class. I was just so amazed. Somebody said that this is going to start to resemble the Holy Roman Empire. What a brilliant analogy. What a brilliant comparison. This is going to be this group of separate states that can never get together. It's surrounded by superpowers that are constantly meddling and keeping it broken up and at each other's throats. I'm going to tell you in very unequivocal terms what happens if these states do not unite. They die. They become the victims of the great powers of Europe, and they are dissolved and they never exist. And so this thing, the United States of America, it never happens. Whoa. Well, now you know why historians call this the critical period. What do they have to do? If they want to live, if they want to survive, if they want to actually represent anything on this earth, what do they have to do? Genuinely and seriously, what do they have to do? What do they have to do with the letter U? It's like a Sesame Street episode. Alexander?
Well, they have to go and get that Declaration of Independence, get some white out, and put a capital U.
Yeah, they gotta capitalize the U. That's it. They've got to capitalize the U. Otherwise, none of this will matter. Otherwise, this declaration that you're seeing, that is the most brilliant statement of political principles ever by a human being, is for nothing. If you don't capitalize the U. All right, tomorrow we'll see that they got it done. All right, I'm pumped up. Talk to you guys tomorrow. Bye for now.